Today's edition of the Kettle Club podcast was recorded prior to the cancellation of Saturday's women's lacrosse game between St. Joseph's and Delaware.
I'm Avery Mars.
And I'm Brendan Roach.
And you're listening to the Kettle Club podcast on the St. Joseph's Sports Network. Welcome back to the Kettle Club podcast. I'm Avery Mars.
I'm Brendan Roach.
And today we are joined by two lacrosse people. We'll call them, I guess, to start. We're here with Steph Kelly. He's a junior on the lacrosse team. And we're here with Beck, who is a student assistant coach. Very official. I like the title. And today we want to just focus on the fact that they are both from Australia. And everything that is going on in Australia has been a little overshadowed recently, wouldn't you say, by some things
going on here? Events occurring in the world, recency bias.
A virus you may know about. But we definitely just want to focus on, their perspective being here. I think it must be different than actually being in Australia when everything was going on. And it still is going on, right? I know it's getting better, but...
Yeah, actually, I think it was between 2 and 4 weeks ago. I saw something from like 7 News, which is like one of the major news stations in Australia, and they said that the fires were like officially contained, and I'm pretty sure now that they're all put out too. So,
who's contained? Like, what does contained mean in a fire sense? I guess.
So this bushfire crisis, it was mainly so bad just because a lot of different fires merged together to make one like mega blaze. So it was really hard for firefighters to like contain it, try and put them out and everything like that. So I think it was a combination of like all the firefighters plus like some like downpours and like rain and everything that helped them contain the fires. And then I'm pretty sure now that they're all put out.
Yeah, New South Wales, I'm pretty sure that there aren't any live bushfires or grass fires. So that's some really good news there.
And where are the fires in relation to where you both are from? Are you from similar areas or?
Yeah, we're actually about 7 minutes away from each other.
You both smile at each other.
yeah, we live around the block from each other, but we're right in Melbourne City. So we're like 10 minutes from the CBD. So I think when we were home in January, the closest fires, I think, were about like 2 hours drive.
I think it was like an hour.
Oh, really? An hour. And so we were getting a lot of like the smoke haze while we had a lacrosse tournament while we were there. And we had a lot of the smoke haze coming over while we were playing. We had to cancel or postpone a few of the games because the smoke was really bad and we weren't able to obviously play in such bad weather. But the bulk of the fires that I think got a lot of the attention were the New South Wales fires were, and that's probably about 6 to 8 hours drive to like the big deal of it.
What was your perception of it before you went over in January? Like, did you have any real, I'm sure you heard a lot about it, but when you finally got there, was it more extreme than you thought? Was it kind of aligned with what people had said, and kind of what was your perspective when you finally got there?
Well, I remember talking to my parents and first heard about the fires in September they began, and they just continuously got worse throughout the year, throughout the months. And I remember talking to my parents about it, and I was getting flight notifications from United Airlines being like, you can change your flights if you want because the fires are really bad, like you don't have to because of the smoke or whatever. And I remember flying over and looking out the window and just like seeing the smoke like from New South Wales and just the wind, how it was all picking up. It was really sad coming over and like seeing from like a bird's eye view like your country like literally burning. It wasn't as bad where we were in Melbourne.
When I the first time I heard about it was actually like from one of the parents here, like with the lacrosse team, and they were like, oh, like I heard about the fires, like is your family okay? And I hadn't really heard much about them, like I hadn't spoken to my parents like before that, they hadn't mentioned anything. So when I first heard that, I kind of just thought, like we have bushfires every year,
right?
And like it's kind of just inevitable, like every summer season It happens like mainly in the country and everything like that.
And so, that's just the dry climate, basically.
Yeah. Right, okay. Like Australia's like climate is very, very dry. And yeah, it's inevitable that like bushfires are just going to happen every year. So I kind of like looked into it after that parent like talked to me and I was like, wow, this is like worse than I've ever experienced it, ever seen it. So yeah, same with Steph. When I went home after she did probably like a week or so. And I don't think there were many like fires like blazing like when I was like landing, but everything was just brown. Like everything was dead. So it was pretty like hard to see.
Yeah, more than normal for Australia.
Yeah.
So with that, do you have to like take preventative measures? Like do you have like an evacuation thing that you kind of went through when you got home? Like your parents sat you down and like was like, this is what we have to do? Or was it like, because I assume these fires spread rapidly and they spread very quickly. So even being an hour away from the closest fires, you probably had to, you know, think about those things.
Well, I remember, so my family, we go camping to the Murray River, which is the border of New South Wales and Victoria. We go there every year. And I remember talking to my dad and he was saying like years ago, I've forgotten the term for it, but they used to like burn the dead grass.
That's the indigenous like practices.
Yeah.
Like how they, it's like preventative. So if they like set fires that they know that they can contain just to like prevent the fires from spreading, like that's an indigenous, like Australian indigenous practice.
But the Australian government has made that illegal now. So there has been a lot of like grass overgrowth and like dead bush like overgrowing and stuff like that. So a controlled burn, yeah. So yeah, the government has made controlled burning illegal now. Which has really caused like a lot of the spread of the fires because I mean, like gum trees are like very prevalent in Australian bush and they're full of eucalyptus, which is like a type of oil. And once that starts light, it just spreads like crazy.
Why is it illegal? Was there a reason?
I'm not too sure.
Yeah, not too sure. I think they just wanted to like try preserve the land and let it grow naturally. But
and I guess just in case like.
Something got out of hand.
Yeah. And it just like.
Well, something did get out of hand.
Yeah.
Regardless, but.
But speaking back to Brendan, what you said, like I think for us, we live like pretty close to the city. Like we've never really had to think about an evacuation. And this was like the first time that it was like scary enough to like think about it. I never really had a conversation with my parents about like what we should do if it ever like got to our house or anything like that, but on the news, like even centered on like people that live in the suburbs or live in the city, like there was a lot more information being you know, kind of like turned out on the news to like help people like come up with those evacuation like protocols and everything.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about, as this was going on, like the people in Australia just being a really close-knit group of people. And I know they needed a lot of help. Like it was at the point where it wasn't an Australian issue. Like it was other people, other countries really needed to help them. So can you talk about like when you went back, kind of how it was society-wise, like people just trying to join together, whether it was firefighters or whoever. People that weren't firefighters were trying to put out the fires, obviously. So can you talk about how that kind of, in a society, what that looked like?
Yeah. So there were a lot of like fundraising efforts. And I think like both people that like were born in Australia and like even like celebrities like born in America. I know like Pink was one of the first people that I saw like made a major donation. I think it was like $500,000. And I think from that on, like a lot more like people with influence and people with money were like trying to raise awareness about the issue and like fundraise money. So I think there was probably a month or so that it was very like people didn't really know about it. And then once people with that influence started to raise that awareness, then there was just like an outpouring of like support, like fundraising efforts. There's actually an Australian like kind of comedian, like TV presence. Her name's Celeste Barber. She, I'm pretty sure she raised over like $45 million.
Wow.
Like, just through her, like, fundraising efforts. And, like, she's very funny. And I think she used that to, like, try and bring in a lot of those donations. But she was one of the people that I saw, like, just fundraising. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, and sort of just going off of that, away from, like, the celebrities and, like, all that sort of thing, even on my Facebook, like, I saw friends of mine, like, dedicating their birthday. Instead of having a birthday party, they'd do, like, a fundraising event on Facebook, and then instead of getting presents for their birthday, people would just donate to their Facebook fund so they mm-hmm. could donate that to a different charity or organization for the bushfire relief.
Mm-hmm.
So it was awesome to see, like, your friends doing that instead of having a party.
And there was also, like efforts to, you know, donate, like, old clothes and, like, canned food and everything to people who lost their homes, like, in those, like, really bad bushfires. Kind of more, like, country areas. And I remember Lizzo, she had a concert. I think she was, like, on tour in Australia. And I remember seeing a photo of her, like, dressed in, like, those, like, tradie, like, vests and, like, packing packages to, like, be donated to those communities. And she just, like, got straight into the heart of it and, like, just wanted to help, wanted to do something. And I think all over Australia, there were people, like, just donating their old clothes that they never wear anymore and just trying to, like, put together packages to help these people who lost their homes, like, rebuild their lives.
Yeah, and now that the fires you said are pretty much contained or out, what's the aftermath and what's the relief effort after the fact looking like? Do you know anything that's going on in terms of, like, rebuilding the environment, rebuilding the, like,
land, the everything, land? Yeah.
Yeah.
I know there was so Kangaroo Island is a very, like, famous, like, destination spot, especially, like, for Australians, but also people, like, touring Australia. It's actually, like, a lot of photos that you'll see, like, that are, like, picturesque of Australia actually come from Kangaroo Island. Like, they have beautiful trees and this nice, like, kind of hotel area, and that was, like, completely destroyed. So actually, like, our current Australian, like, head coach for the senior Australian team, she and her family, like, traveled there and just, like, spent a weekend there trying to, you know, like, these places need the tourism and need people to come and, like, not be scared to, like, come, especially since the bushfires are out. So it's just, like, yeah, traveling to these places, you know, buying from local stores, also, like, just spreading awareness that, like, they're rebuilding. I think that's, like, a major thing that people are focusing on doing.
Yeah, I think when these things happen, we think a lot about people, right? Like, people's safety, the safety of the firefighters, the safety of the land. But a big part of it, and what I think a lot of what we saw was probably animals who were hurt by these fires, because they are these helpless beings in a way when it comes to fire, you know? And I think it was touching to me to see just some of these animals that were severely burned, or people even, you saw the videos of, like, women getting out of their car and, like, the one koala. Like, it was one of those, like, such heartfelt moments that, like, really attached, I think, me to, like, oh, wow, this is, like, really devastating, not just land and people, but animals as well. And I know we talked about the koalas in one of the classes we had together. So can you talk about that, just the animals and, like, the devastation there? I know Australia is known for kind of having all these different variety of animals and kind of what that looks like now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just from, like, reading articles and stuff, I think it was about 1 billion animals.
Yeah, over a billion.
Over a billion animals, like, native to Australia's wildlife have just died because of these bushfires, because a lot of, obviously, where the bushfires were, they were out in the country, and a lot of the farmers, they obviously have their areas caged in, so the animals that were there didn't have anywhere to go, like, they couldn't get out. So it was really devastating. I remember seeing a video on Instagram of someone just driving through after the fires had gone through, and just all the burned, like, kangaroos, sheep, cows, everything just, like, up against the fence because they had nowhere to go. But, you know, like, it's just, it was all over. Like, I remember it was just everywhere on Instagram. And I think that's when it really came over here because, as I said before, the fires did begin in September, but we didn't really hear about anything. But then when I went home, it really got a massive social media influence on Instagram, Twitter, and a bunch of people were like texting home being like, wow, I didn't realize the bushfires were this bad. Like I saw the animals on Instagram, blah, blah, blah. And I think that was like the biggest eye opener for people that like our country was like, it was going through something.
Yeah, I feel like we see the trees burning and everyone's like, okay, like whatever, yeah. Trees burn. Then you see one koala and it's like everyone is like, that's it. Like yeah. They put their foot down. So yeah, I think social media in a lot of ways too, which we can talk about. I know, Beck, you have a point you want to make, but we can talk about too. I think that really heightened everything and honestly in a lot of ways probably helped just gaining awareness through social media of the videos, whatever it was. But
I think too, like with koalas, like you think of Australia, you think koala. So it's like pretty sad to know just how many of them like died in this in these fires. And also like just them as animals, like their instinct when there's a fire is to like move up the tree. But these trees like just burn so easily because there is like eucalyptus in the trees, so it's hard. Plus they're like slow, they're very like they sleep like 22 hours a day and they
that's what makes them awesome. They just they just hang out.
Yeah, they don't have the energy to move fast and try and like escape these fires. And also like Australia is just such a unique land that like everyone knows about the koalas, kangaroos as well, but like there are so many like native like species that kind of did perish in these fires, and like ecosystems too that you can only find in Australia. Like we're a very unique land, and I think especially with years past, like these fires are just like continuing to happen. So there has been a decline of like births of like each of these species, so this is like just kind of taking out a lot of these animals.
And going off of that, I remember like just hearing about it on the news. I think the biggest thing that was worrying for a lot of the wildlife is they don't know how many koalas or how many kangaroos actually died because they were just being burned, so they couldn't like keep an accurate count. So I know a lot of the recovery efforts is trying to tally how many are left and if like the koalas need to be classified as endangered, or like I know that there's talk about that at the moment. So I think that's one of the biggest things, because I remember like watching an Australian zoo YouTube video with the Irwins on it, and like they were really struggling to like even get koalas to like reproduce in a captivity setting. So I can't imagine like after the bushfire, like out in the wild.
Yeah, and just going back to social media, because I want to talk about, I think, the impact that I saw it probably have. But going forward, you know, social media kind of has those moments where, example, coronavirus right now, it's really big, right? That's all you hear about. Same thing with the bushfires. I felt like that was all I saw. And every time I went on social media, I kind of learned something new, whether it was the koalas or a new video or something that was happening, how it was kind of progressing. How do you see it kind of going on next, like in terms of stopping it from next year, like this not happening again? Like you said, it is a very dry climate, so like you are prone to have a fire here and there. How do you kind of see that impact just going forward? Like, because it has died down on social media, so how do we keep people aware and like helping and making sure it doesn't happen again?
I think that's a good question. I mean, social media has such a power to like raise awareness for anything, and I think this is just it was so big that it traveled around the world, and like we're so grateful, like with firefighters, all our firefighters like across the country were like flying to New South Wales, to Victoria, to help with these fires, even firefighters from the US. And I remember I flew home, like coming back, not flew home, but like flew from Australia back to Philly, and
Philly's home. Come on,
yeah,
you can say it now. You've been here long enough.
Now.
Yeah, but yeah, I was flying back to Philly, and there were firefighters on my flight, and you know the pilot shouted them out, and like it was just amazing that there were people like literally like in a different hemisphere that would fly to Australia and help out. And I think that's the power of social media. You know, our country is like really far away from the rest of the world.
26 so, hour flight.
Yeah, 26 Yikes. Hours. So I think that that's the power of it. You know, we can get that support, like both like monetary, like in person, firefighters, all that sort of stuff. So I think like this is going to be hard to forget, I think, for anyone around the world, like not just Australians. So I think coming to our next summer, so like next Christmas, I think people are just going to be more aware of it. And I think part of the social media aspect of it, like the facts of these fires were just, you know, like in your face mm-hmm. with Instagram stories, you know, posts, Twitter, everything like that. And I think those like short, quick facts really just like stuck with people.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it sounds bad, but the California wildfires probably helped in some regard because it like kind of made those celebrities that predominantly are living in California empathetic to what was going on, because it was even worse and on a larger scale than what was going on in California.
Mm-hmm.
And just the outpour of social media and the awareness of it, I think everybody was aware
and
knew what they could do to help.
Yeah, I think sometimes it has to come kind of near to you or like closer to home for people to be affected by it. And I think the videos, and like I said, that kind of had some effect on it. But you talked a little bit about fundraisers that have been put in place in Australia, and you guys have one going on yourselves.
Yes, we do.
On Saturday, your game against Delaware. So can mm-hmm. you just talk about that and, you know, what it means to you, one, and then two, the support of your teammates and your coaches. I know you guys played few other teams that might have had Australian players or coaches on them as well.
Towson.
Yeah. So can you just talk about that, like what that means to you?
Yeah. So we're doing a fundraiser. It's kind of like a dedication game series. So with lacrosse in Australia, like it's a very small community, but we've expanded into the US. So, you know, whether players or coaches, there are a lot of Australians in the US, like in the US lacrosse community. So it's me, Steph, there's a couple other players from Niagara, I think University of Mount Olive and Jacksonville have players, and then coaches.
And incoming freshmen here at St. Joe's and Loyola. Oh,
yes. Great. And then coaches, head coach at Loyola, head coach at Michigan, head coach at, Towson, we're all Australian. So obviously like this crisis is like dear to our hearts. And I think the people that we have met while being in the US, like it is transferred, it's dear to their hearts too. So we wanted to do a fundraiser mainly to raise awareness and like raise money too, to, help support like recovery efforts in Australia. So we have dedicated our game against Delaware this Saturday, to that, to raise awareness and to raise money. And across all those other schools, like we're all dedicating a game on our schedule to this effort.
And the support from the St. Joe's community has been amazing. It always is. Every time we have a tailgate or a game or something, a parent will always come up, be like, how's home? How are the fires? I'll always get a question about it. And it's just so comforting, like being so far away from home, having that support from not even my teammates, but my teammates' parents. It's always nice. And yeah, the coaching staff like Keho and everyone has been so supportive through it all. And the teammates, yeah, they're the best. Yeah. Always supportive.
And we know like the people that we know in the US have already, like donated and expressed their support, but it's just so comforting that support is continual. And it's always coming, whether it's just like kind words, whether it's money, whether it's just, you know, a hug that you need, for being so far away from home.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've started a GoFundMe, with all the money going to the Aussie Arc Foundation, which is helping, wildlife in Australia and the recovery and rebuild of ecosystems and, you know, like kind of the koalas, you know, trying to breed them.
We need the koalas. They can't go.
They're too cute. But yeah, that's our plan for this like fundraising effort and for our season. And we're really excited that it's not just us doing it, that we've been able to expand to like every Australian in the US, right. Like playing lacrosse.
It's a group effort, right? Everyone's got to do their part. We want to thank you guys for being on. It was great. I think people need to know even more about it. I think we can always keep learning. And like you said, that's kind of how we stop it from happening next year, you know, kind of take this year and use it to not have it happen again. But again, like we said, the Hawk Women's Lacrosse team will be hosting Delaware this Saturday, March 14th at 1 p.m. Everyone should be there. We'll be there. And if you're able to donate and would like to help the cause, please find the link to their GoFundMe page on any of their social media profiles, SJUHawks_WLAX, or at stjoeshawks.com/Australia. Good luck to you guys on Saturday. We want to win, of course.
Thank you.
But of course, the most important part is, you know, the fundraiser and doing what you guys are doing. I think it's awesome. Both of you kind of attest to who you guys are and your team. So we'll be right back on the Kettle Club podcast with a special guest interview with a couple Hawks that share a very special connection. So don't go anywhere.
Go Hawks.
Hey, it's Avery and Brendan from the Kettle Club podcast here to tell you about our friends at Landmark Americana Tap and Grill, right here on St. Joseph's campus and across the street from Hagen Arena.
Landmark Americana is your home on Hawk Hill for eats and drinks all day long. Landmark offers 14 HD TVs, a private party space, and a wide variety of specials. SJU faculty and staff receive 20% off lunch and discounted drinks every day, as well as happy hour specials Monday through Friday from 4 to 7, including half-price wings, fries, and other appetizers like cheesesteak egg rolls, nachos, and tenders.
Landmark also has trivia on Tuesday nights and bingo on Wednesday for all ages. Come join us at Landmark Americana on 54th Street, right off of City Line Avenue, before a Hawk basketball game or for your next night out.
And we're back on the Kettle Club podcast, and we have a special guest interview for you today. Women's soccer senior Gabby Vagnozzi had the chance to sit down with one of her teammates, senior Kylie D'Ambra, and men's soccer head coach Don D'Ambra, to talk about the unique dynamic of their relationship as a father-daughter duo here on Hawk Hill.
Hello, everyone. My name is Gabrielle Vagnozzi, and I will be your host. Today, I have Don D'Ambra, head coach of the men's soccer team, and Kylie D'Ambra, a former women's soccer player. So you guys are probably all wondering what the connection between these two are. Kylie, would you like to enlighten them on the connection?
Sure. This is, lo and behold, my father. pretty interesting dynamic. He's been my role model for my whole life, my coach. And now he is just right down the hall in his office from my locker room or my old locker room.
Okay, so before we get into your relationship, I want to know more about Don's experience playing at St. Joe's. Don, I know you're the only Hawk in Hawk history to be the A-10 player of the year, and I know you still have the school record for points and goals, so I'm assuming you had a great 4 years, but can you tell me a little bit more about what it was like playing here at St. Joe's?
It was a long time ago. It was like a lifetime ago. But back when I was playing, it was a lot of the best talent in the city would go to one of the it was Soccer 7 at the time. There were 7 Division I schools. So it was a lot of city kids. It was all Philly guys. And St. Joe's was, they recruited a lot of guys from just a couple of the same high schools. So I had a lot of friends that I was going to high school with, and we all came together. So, it was very comfortable. It was guys that I've known growing up. And like I said, it was all top players. So it was much different than it is now. So it was a lot of fun. You know, we had a lot of success. We went to the finals, you know, my senior year in the A-10. So it was, it was fun.
That's awesome. So if you had to pick, what's your favorite memory?
I think just making a strong A-10 run. I mean, you guys have been there on the women's side, so there's a lot of buzz at the school, and it was, we had a great team, good chemistry, and to make that kind of push and potentially get into the NCAAs was fun.
Right. I had the honor of playing with Kylie myself, and we went to the tournament and the championship freshman year, so that was an unbelievable experience, and we can relate to that. So Kylie, did the fact your dad was the head coach have an impact on you coming to St. Joe's? Have you always wanted to come here?
Actually, no. The opposite. I actually never wanted to come here because he was the head coach.
Ouch.
I tried to fight the natural pull of what I felt. I mean, I just love this school, and I actually went on 3 or 4 visits because I had friends on the team already, and I grew up, you know, running around on Hawk Hill and watching his games. So I just really loved the campus, and I loved the culture as I got to know some of the players that were already on the team. But I wasn't super into the idea of having my dad. You know, I'm a pretty independent person, so I really didn't want to have him infringe on that opportunity going into college. But that hasn't been a problem.
Yeah, so
it has worked out when she needs a couple bucks and she could just pop into my spaghetti office and ask some for homemade 20 meals. Bucks here, 20 bucks there.
So the culture of St. Joe's brought you here.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really I love the campus, and then you know, the team, as I love Jess. I grew up, you know, she's right down the his office right down the hall, so I would always talk to her, and she really was a big part in that as well.
Right. So I'm assuming your dad made your transition into freshman year easier. What did he do? Like, he was right down the hallway.
Yeah.
So.
You know, I think I actually had a pretty easy transition, and I didn't see him as much. That was kind of my goal. I think a lot of people might say that he would have a bigger part in that, but he actually, I never really wanted to see him. I had the opposite kind of effect of having somebody that's so close to me right on campus. So, but when I did need it, you know, everybody goes through their highs and lows throughout the year, and especially as a freshman, it is a big transition. So when I needed it, he was there, and just being able to have my family in general come to my games was a really big thing for me. So right. I think that made my soccer transition easy as well.
Yeah, I bet. So Don, what is your favorite part about seeing Kylie? I'm gonna
obviously coaching the men's side. I always worried as she was going through the college search that I wouldn't be able to watch her play, and that I have a job responsibility that's a priority. And so when she chose to go to, she was very resistant on going to St. Joe's, and we didn't really force it on our end. But when she chose it, for me, it's nice to finish up my training session with the men's side and to pop out and watch the women's team play, watch her. Like I said, when, you know, things are going well, it was nice to kind of see her or take her out to dinner or whatever. And if she's struggling with anything, for her to have an easy way to just pop in and talk about it. And I think the first year she wanted that distance to be on her own and be independent. But each year that went by, I think we saw more and more of her, so I think she realized it was a good thing. So
yeah, Kai was always sending us like pictures and Snapchats about you out to dinner with your dad, like out to dinner with Don, out to lunch with Don. We're like jealous because I wish I could go to lunch with my dad all the time too. So Kylie, what are your thoughts on the relationship between the men's and women's soccer team, because we're pretty close?
Yeah, I mean, I personally have a really good bond with the men's team. I think it's I don't know if it has anything to do with the fact that we know my dad so well, like they know him as a coach, and I kind of went through the same thing. But I would say that the women's team and the men's team have a really strong bond. I mean, we go through similar schedules, and we just have face a lot of the same challenges. So I would say that we're really close. We've been close with our grade since freshman year. I mean, some of my best friends in the world are some of the men's soccer team players. So I would say it's really, really close.
Right. And we were just talking about how soccer, it's like, compared to other sports, it's the most similar between different sports. So I feel like the two teams really connect, and we could both like talk about how the running stinks.
Yeah.
We can just relate so much. Okay, so Don, what are you going to miss the most about having Kylie around? Because she is a senior. This is her last semester. What are you going to miss the most?
Nothing.
Yeah, I knew he was going to say that. he's been ready. No.
I just, you know, I've coached her since she was young, and to be here, like I said, and be able to see as much of her, I probably was able to get to maybe 80, 90% of her games and stuff. Yeah. So just to not be able to see her on a regular basis and watch her do what she loves to do. And, you know, I'll miss that. It's kind of an end of an era and on to a new one, but she'll end up having some new things that she's excited about, and I'm sure she'll always stay close to home to some degree. Not this close where I can walk 20 yards and go see her play or whatever, but you know, anytime something fun or positive ends, it's always kind of like, you know, it's a shame, but you know, something new and exciting will start back up again. So exactly. We'll look forward to that.
Exactly. So Kylie, do you have any idea what this new chapter will be? Or are there any plans for you in the future?
I do not. My goals as of right now are to actually play abroad. So that's in the works. I don't want to be done. Soccer's been such a huge part of my life. I mean, my entire life growing up watching him, and he's a coach, you know, it's been everything to me. It's I think this period of having soccer end and trying to figure out, all right, now what's the next step? I've realized that soccer is almost too big of a piece of my life to just dismiss. So I think that that's the way my heart is being pulled right now. And I love traveling. I'm very passionate about it. I had the opportunity to travel when I was a junior in high school to play abroad. I went to Croatia, and that was like a really eye-opening, enlightening experience. So I feel very connected to the idea of playing abroad and continuing my experience with playing.
So in a dream world, where would you love to end up?
My dream would be to go to Australia, just because I would love to live there. It's always been a place that I've just glorified, which is very different from, you know, being 20 minutes from home. So it's very intimidating, but also I would love to be that far away from home and kind of prove to myself I can do that. I can, you know, experience a whole other side of the world and still do what I love.
Mrs. De Amber's not happy about that.
Mama D's not feeling that one, but there's a little bit of a debate in the house about that, but we'll see. Everything that's meant to happen will happen, and I'm very trusting in that will come to fruition.
So, Don, I'm assuming you're just all on board. Go chase your dreams.
You know, there's a soccer coach and a person's perspective, and then there's a dad's perspective. And I just think for me, like, you know, as long as it's well thought out, it's a safe environment, it's something that makes sense for her, then I support it. You know, soccer's been my career and my life too. So I want her to experience whatever opportunity she can get. But for me, it's got to be the right situation. It's got to be something that we feel comfortable with, and you know, who's involved, where is she going to stay, all those types of things. So as long as that stuff is sorted out properly, then I'm happy. You know,
he's got the dad approach, the very safe, practical, which we need, because I'm a little bit of a dreamer.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that, and thank you both for coming in today and talking to me.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a pleasure.
Our thanks to Gabby for that interview, and to Don and Kylie for their time as well. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Kettle Club podcast. You can find the Kettle Club and any other St. Joseph Sports Network podcasts at sjuhawks.com/podcasts. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and the TuneIn app. Just search for St. Joseph Sports Network. You can also find the GoFundMe for the SJU women's lacrosse team at sjuhawks.com/Australia. We'll see you next time, because the Hawk will never die.
Handle all your banking remotely with Univest Mobile Platform. Easy, convenient, secure, because life needs a little more wow. Live life, stay connected with Univest. Univest Bank and Trust Company, member FDIC.
Rothman Orthopedics, the official team physicians of your St. Joseph's Hawks, provides the region with unmatched orthopedic care. For more information or to schedule an appointment, visit www.rothmanortho.com. For orthopedic excellence, think Rothman first.